Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Rise and shine, Atlanta. My name is Mike Johnson. Her name is Allie Mack. His name is Dylan. He's behind the glass playing all the tunes. The Buffalo Bills got 7 days till they come in here as an angry football team coming off a loss. What a crazy weekend it was. My back hurts from sleeping on a hotel bed. Dylan is still rooting for the Phillies. The Hawks have a preseason game tonight. We got to get into all of it, Allie. I'm not even going to stay in the way any longer. Guys, I am so happy to be back with you. I cannot even tell you.
It feels like a year's worth of stuff
really
has
does.
Happened
really
since
does.
We were last in here. Dylan, are you healed since the Eagles lost?
I wasn't upset.
Man.
I'm a Falcons fan. I'm a Braves fan. And look, the thing about the Phillies is just that I would rather see a NL East team in there than a repeat of last year's World Series. That's all I was saying. Since I'm getting crucified for it, fine. It can be the Tigers and the Cubs or the Tigers and the Brewers or something like that.
Don't back off now.
Since everybody was so up in arms about it.
Don't back off now.
Let's get you caught up in some of the headlines since we last got to talk with you. We will get into MLB playoffs in a bit, but got to highlight that Yankees are down. Blue Jays won the first two games of their series 10-1 on Saturday, 13-7 yesterday. They'll play again tomorrow. Hawks preseason starts tonight. They take on the Houston Rockets at 8 o'clock. Georgia bounced back with a 35-14 win over Kentucky at home. Three top 15 teams in college football got upset this weekend. UCLA got its first win of the season by beating number 7 Penn State 42-37. Florida beat number 9 Texas 29-21. And Cincinnati beat number 14 Iowa State 38-30. And of course, number 10, Alabama got a nice 30-14 win over number 16, Vanderbilt, with our very own Mike Johnson in the building. Yeah. You excited about that one?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I got to say, just real quick, I sat in the end zone seats, like which I usually hate sitting. I'll never sit anywhere else. I could see the offensive line going left and right and pass protecting and picking up blitzes, and I was like, oh, my God, it's like O-line porn back here. This is so good. Why don't I sit in the end zone more often?
Why weren't you sitting in the end zone before?
Why wasn't I?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just thought the 50-yard line seats were the best seats in the house. You know what I mean? Like, always aiming for that. And I just, like, if I had my choice, it's like, oh, I'm going to sit at the 50 or the 40, you know, so I can see both ends of the field. No, dude. Like, that was where it was at, right there in the end zone. God, I could see the whole play opening up. It was so good. It was like watching the All-22 in real time.
When Simone and I go to games, that's where we usually sit. We usually sit in one of the end zones.
Bro, I loved it. I haven't sat many end zone seats in my time, but that was where it was at. Good stuff.
That's something we should talk about at some point. Maybe that's a top five Tuesday or something, is that things you're told are the best that aren't the best.
Yeah, maybe so.
Right?
There's
some type of expectations versus reality type thing.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
The Coca-Cola Classic, I like Coke Zero. I don't know.
You know
what I mean?
Funny.
I was told it needs to taste like the original. I don't want it to. I actually enjoy the Zero.
In a weird turn of events, that will come up during my Mac drop today.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
You were going to say that's going to come up again.
It will be in my Mac drop.
Allie, can I ask you a very quick question?
Yeah.
Have you listened to Taylor Swift's new album yet?
Of course I have. I saw the movie.
Have you listened to the whole thing?
Yes.
Okay. Can I get your quick synopsis on it? Because Simone has a take, and I'm interested to see what your take was.
I think if I was a preteen, I would love to figure out all the puzzles and Easter eggs and everything. But at this point in my life, I don't have time for this. I just don't have time.
Hey.
And this is exactly what the Mac drop is about, because I was a peripheral Swiftie this weekend watching everyone on TikTok figure things out. and it led to something really disappointing.
Oh, no.
I think Taylor upset some people this
weekend.
Oh, no. Yeah, so we'll
That's
talk
the first
about
time
that.
Ever.
I think I know what you're talking about, too.
It's a big deal.
Simone's main thing was, yeah, I think if we're talking about the same thing, she's also disappointed in one, Taylor Swift. But also, as far as like just the whole album goes, it's called Life of a Showgirl, and it's supposed to be about, you know, just her figuring out, you know, the life of a showgirl. But she feels like that's not what the album is about at all. It's about, like, it's a whole bunch of love songs.
It is.
That's not the life of a showgirl. So, besides the one song, Life of a Showgirl was actually about, you know,
right,
was on brand.
All right. You've gone on too long.
I'm sorry, I was waiting to pick Alex Brand on this all week after this.
The problem is, when you fall in love and things are great, music changes. You know how easy it was to run like 20 miles when I could listen to like man-hating music and all this stuff, and now I'm in love and it's just different. It doesn't work the same way. It's not as powerful. All right, so what we really need to talk about here, Mike mentioned it, the Falcons' next opponent, the Buffalo Bills, lost last night to the Patriots, 23-20, first loss for the Bills this season.
Yeah, I think in a weird way, what y'all were just talking about is a good segue into this conversation. Would you rather have the Bills coming off a loss, right, where it's like, oh, New England gives you the blueprint on how to stop the Buffalo Bills? Or would you have rather had them fat and happy on an 8-day work week where they can just be like, you know what, man, we're pretty good. We ain't worried about them Falcons down there. Like, it's kind of a double-edged sword.
If only we could have both. Couldn't they have gotten the loss and then played another game and won? And then
Yeah. And that's what's crazy, and I'm watching it. And I think that Buffalo, I don't think they're broken anyway. I don't think there was a blueprint either way to what what New England was doing. I think that Buffalo just played a very, very sloppy game last night. When you look at it, they actually finished the game with 11 penalties for 90 yards and 3 turnovers. Josh Allen absolutely forcing the ball a couple times, a throw over the middle to Khalil Shakir, bad throw. And New England was able to kind of jump on that. Drake May and company, kind of a little bit of a coming out party, but a massive win for Mike Vrabel and that team. So, yeah, I mean, I think that Buffalo, like, if you were like, oh, man, showed them the blueprint, I'd be like, nah, man, they just played bad.
That's the exact thing. The blueprint is, okay, Buffalo needs to beat themselves.
Yes.
Well, yeah, thanks a lot. We kind of already figured that. So I would have much rather Buffalo win, still be undefeated, riding that high, and kind of come in here sleeping on the Falcons a little bit because, again, it's not like New England, like you said, did anything special. Buffalo still ran for over 100 yards. Josh Allen still did a good job of passing. I think passed for, 243 or something like that? I'm not sure. So, again, New England didn't do anything special. Buffalo just beat themselves. It's plain and simple. But I will say this. I want to give shout-out to our fearless leader, Mike Conte. Did give an interesting nugget as far as the Falcons' stats go. After all the Sunday games, Falcons, number one in total defense, number one in pass defense. Now, rushing. They're 16th, and I think that's the main thing. If they can somehow, if we talk about a somewhat blueprint to beating the Bills, they have to slow down the running game first and foremost.
Let me throw this right back at you then while we're on this topic, and you talk about the Falcons. This was the first round of byes, I believe, in the NFL.
Correct.
This was the first, I think, us in Chicago.
Steelers.
Steelers. So let me throw this back at you because I did think about this. Washington had a really good game. Now, Jaden Daniels is back in the lineup, but it wasn't that. Kroski Merritt ran the crap out of the ball.
He went off.
And so I'm looking at it going, is it Jaden Daniels that was that much better, or did the Falcons just do a really good job at one point? I mean, now, granted, like I said, Washington ran for like 150 yards, but that wasn't anything compared to what it felt like they did yesterday. So I don't know what to take away from that game looking at the first 4 weeks either.
I think it's a bit of both. I think it's the Falcons did do a better job of containing the Commanders offense overall. I also think it's a little bit of the Jaden Daniels effect too, because let's be honest, the Falcons weren't that scared of Marcus Mariota throwing the ball. And look, he made some good throws, but at the end of the day, they weren't that scared of Marcus Mariota beating him with his arm. The Chargers were absolutely scared, as they should be, of Jaden Daniels beating with him his arm. And so that it just added another layer to the Commanders offense that I don't think they necessarily had when Marcus Mariota was in there against the Falcons. So I think it's a bit of both. I think the Falcons still did a good job, but I also think with Jaden Daniels back. The Commanders had another set to their offense that the Chargers had to worry about. And so I think that's part of the reason why we saw what we saw yesterday.
Good so call. We are a week out. How are you guys feeling? Optimistic or excited at this point since the Bills lost? Or is that going to kind of taper as the week goes? How does this work?
Here's how I feel about it. I think the Buffalo Bills, even after last night, are a top three team in the NFL. I think, and Dylan points out, I think they have to beat themselves. But I also think the Falcons can capitalize on a lot of those mistakes. The Bills were at home last night and had 10, 11 penalties. Right? I think they had I'm pretty sure they had 5 penalties in the first quarter. I have to go back and look at it. I think they had 5 penalties in the first quarter. If the Falcons fans can give enough of a home environment, which I think is going to be tough with Bills Mafia headed south, that's going to be tough. But I do think, like, you know, we've talked a number of times. Xavier Watts has a dropped interception. Divine Diablo could have gotten his hands on one. Like, there are opportunities to take these balls away that you have to absolutely follow through with. Like, you can't have dropped interceptions or, you know, they put the ball on the ground, but they recover it. You have to be able to kind of, you know, do exactly what New England did and allow them to beat themselves, but also capitalize off those, you know, off those things. I think even when you saw Buffalo beat themselves, New England did a nice job of kind of rebounding and putting together a 90-yard drive or, you know, a quick score or an explosive play, and Drake May did a good job. So I think the Falcons have all the ability in the world to do it. I think you have to get the Commanders' version of the offense and not the Panthers' version of the offense, which is, you know, the easiest thing in the world to say. But I wouldn't say I'm scared of Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Buffalo is what it is. I don't think, and Dylan can maybe back me up on this, I don't think my opinion on the Falcons will change if they go out and lose this game by a touchdown on Monday. I think that Buffalo is very good. Now, do I think the Falcons can win? Absolutely. So I don't know. I'm thank God we're still a week out, because I'm still kind of wrapping my mind around it.
Yeah, the Falcons, they have all the pieces needed to take down the Buffalo Bills. The main thing, and I'll go back to it, the main thing I'm worried about is what they're going to be able to do to stop this Buffalo Bills running game, because we know this season, if there is anything, and this Falcons defense, all things considered, has been pretty darn good. I mean, we just talked about it. They're number one in total defense. The one thing, the one chink in their armor has probably been their lack of consistent rush defense. And, again, the 16th in rush defense right now. So that's the one thing that scares me. And if Buffalo is going to try to do anything against the Falcons, I think they're going to definitely try to establish that run game and get back on track that way. It doesn't – them losing against the Patriots and having the 3 turnovers and all the penalties, that doesn't necessarily make me feel any better or worse, because you still have to imagine that Buffalo was going to come in here focused, trying to win a game, whether they were undefeated or now they got one loss to their name. So that doesn't sway me one way or another, but – it does make me feel like, okay, they'll come in here maybe a little bit more focused, and the Falcons just have to make sure they're on their end game. And if they do give you opportunities as far as turnovers go, then the Falcons just have to take advantage of them.
Well, I know we sometimes have a reputation in Atlanta of getting to places and events a little bit late. We have 7 days to get the message out that you need to get there early. I know it's not you. It's everyone else in the party that's going with you.
That's right.
Just send the memo now. Get
the
smartest schedule now.
It's the traffic.
Atlanta traffic's awful. We get it. So let's plan ahead. You got 7 days.
Leave early.
Coming up, Alex Anthopoulos held a presser Saturday morning. He set the record straight on Brian Snicker's retirement. We'll get into those deets next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Radio 92.9, The Game. We are The Morning Shift. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson. Bo Morgan taking a couple more days off. Well-deserved. Dylan's behind the glass. Before we get into the Braves presser from this weekend, I do have to ask, I got a little bit of the story from this weekend. You went to Alabama.
Yes.
Got to relive your college days.
We tried.
How was it?
You know, it was a lot of fun to be at the game, man. We had a really good setup with the people we went with, and all that was fine. How much, let me ask you from this angle, how much has Athens changed in the last 20 years?
Oh, gosh. I wouldn't recognize it if I went today. Yeah.
Right. That's exactly what we were kind of untangling.
Okay.
Throughout our time. It's just Tuscaloosa is so much different. And Lindsay and I, my wife, talked about this on the way home. The undergrad population was 16,000 when I enrolled at Alabama. And I don't know how many graduates that included. I think it got up to 20,000 when you include graduates. Okay. It's doubled. Like, it's doubled what it used to be. All that includes short-term housing, which includes restaurants, which includes small bars, which includes everything else. You know what I mean? Like, we stayed on a road that had nothing but trees on it and was, like, lined with hotels, bars, apartments, this, that, and the other. And so I was like, man, where are we staying? I don't remember anything even being here. And we show up, and, of course, there's a hotel. So it was really cool, man. We went to dinner on Friday night at Chuck's Fish, which is the place that everybody – actually, they were in charge of the college game day food on set. The next day, know a lot of people involved in that. That's a kind of a Destin-based place. So had a lot of fun doing that, had good company. It was cool to see some of the people that we were around, like I said, and had great seats, man. But outside of that, kind of working our way down the bars that we were used to kind of navigating 20 years ago, is like, man, where are we at?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, the things that were cool when I was 20 are not cool when I'm 38. You know what I mean? I'm like, I can't hear you. What did you say?
Yeah.
I hang on. The music's too loud. There's a lot of people in here. Like, you know, used to seek that kind of environment out. Now it's like, let's just go back to the hotel lobby. I can't hear you. Yeah. I'm feeling old, man. I was feeling pretty geriatric.
Mike,
all good.
Don't feel too old, because I guess it's more so just, it's not my vibe, but I've never been into really like places like that. I mean, every now and again, when I was like 20s, I mean, I'm still in my 20s, but like early 20s, I sought those places out. But now I'm still the same way as you. I'm like, I don't even feel like going that. I don't want that many people like that. The club scene's not for me anymore either, dog.
Well, and let me just say this before we move on. It was very dive bar-y when I was in college, which I think most college campuses are. Very not dive bar-y now. A lot of like club atmosphere.
Right.
Which there's I think it was like 6 or 7 years ago, it was released that Bama finally in the history of the university had more out-of-state students than in-state students.
Oh, wow.
And now I can see it. Like, I can see it in the way that people are coming from, like, New Jersey and Pennsylvania. I'm like, what? I, like, stepped into this bar that I thought, you know, what used to be like a dive bar. I saw, like, Kenny Chesney play there one time. And I walk in there, and there is this DJ just spinning it and lasers going everywhere. And I was like, where am I at right now? For the love, take me back to Tuscaloosa. Not in Kansas anymore, man. It was rough.
Things changed so rapidly. I went to GCSU, which now everyone just calls Georgia College. That's how long ago I went. but I went back to give a little speech to the media department, and I was like, I want to go get a T-shirt. Like, so let me go to the bookstore. And I went, not the bookstore anymore. I was like, this is very sobering. I have not been here in a long time. I don't even know where to buy merch. we do have to get into, because game day was there later in the show. We got to talk about the interaction between Nick Saban and Bill Belichick on game day, because it absolutely cracked me up, and I thought of you instantly. I was like, well, Mike be proud of Nick Saban
yes,
in this
probably.
Moment.
I haven't heard it, but I've heard about it.
Okay.
So that'll be fun.
6:40, we will get into that. Now let's talk about Braves GM Alex Anthopoulos. He gave us more context over the weekend about Brian Snicker's retirement. So he basically laid it out that he signed an 8-year contract 3 years ago. And it was 3 years to manage, 5 years as an advisor. But he also said if Brian wanted to go ahead and manage another year, he would have absolutely allowed this. So yeah. It was completely Snicker's choice to go ahead and retire.
And I think that, you know, he was on the steakhouse, obviously, Friday. He did a pretty good job of answering this. And they kind of just asked him bluntly, you know, was it 100% your decision? And he was like, yes, it was. I feel like they would have had me back. And I think this is how we saw it playing out. Maybe you more than me. I was a little bit more in question of whether or not this was a 100% him decision.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, and Alex did a great job, and I think Alex is able to approach this kind of in a hindsight format where he's like, whew, you know what I mean? I wasn't forced into making a decision. He was the one that wanted to step away. I think that Alex very much is probably okay with there being new blood at the top. I don't think it's like, oh man, shucks, like he didn't want to come back. I think it's like, okay, what's the next step? Am I completely out of pocket saying that?
I don't know.
You look at him as Grandpa Snit. You know, I mean, it is what it is. But I think Alex is like, okay, cool. Like that, it is just is what it is.
I honestly think Alex Anthopoulos was fine with either way. We talk about fair or foul. I think he was fine.
Yeah.
He was right in the middle. If Brian Snicker wants to come back, okay, we ended the season strong. We'll take that momentum. We'll try to carry into the next season with some new pieces added in. We'll see what we can do, and we'll rally around Snit and what probably would have been his final year if he decided to come back for 2026. And then on the other side, like you just said, new blood. We have some new vibes going, and it'll be kind of starting a fresh page, turning a new page. The start of something new. So I think he was fine. So I think he was literally fine either way. And he was ready. I think he was ready for either way to go. I think he was ready to build upon and ready to make hopefully another run whichever way Brian Snicker decided to go.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting to put those two kind of things together where Anthopoulos' presser and what Snit said on the steakhouse on Friday, it was like, okay, I do believe y'all. Both of y'all, it's like an interrogation. Y'all have the same story. You know what I mean? All these things are kind of lining up. But I just think that there was, if Snit had said, hey, I really want to return, Anthopoulos would have been like, okay, what's different? You know, what are we just going back to the drawing board with the same squad, the same coaching staff, everything else? I don't think he would have been against it. I think he would have just wanted to know, like, what's the game plan?
Right.
I think with Snicker saying, hey, it's time for me to step away. We've talked about the grandkids' baseball games. We've talked about the three-year contract. I think Alex is like, okay, you know, just is what it is. Let's move on from there. I don't think it was like an all shucks.
But I think you could argue the opposite side, too, if Alex had been like, what's going to change? I mean, Snicker could have been like, what are you going to get me? You know,
right.
It could have gone
that's fair.
Back
that's,
and forth like that.
And that's, you know, we talk about all the time, one of the conversations around coaching in pro sports in general, like that the manager in some of these situations, and I only say this because of Aaron Boone has been really catching it up in New York, the manager in some of these situations catches way too much flack for some of the things that go on the field. But in the end, they might get a lot of credit for some of the things that happen that's not in their control. Your starting pitcher goes out and gets like 15 Ks. It's like, oh, yeah, man. Yeah, I'll take that win.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? You know, on the flip side, Aaron Boone and the New York Yankees, and I know we'll get into it, historical numbers being put up against the Yankees over the last couple of outings. So it's Aaron Boone sitting there like, what am I supposed to do about it? We're getting shelled.
Right.
You know what I mean? This is not about pulling a string or putting a reliever. We're getting shelled. So I think that Brian Snicker very much, I think we all still have the warm fuzzies about his tenure. He's going to go into the Hall of Fame next year. We're excited that he's going to be a part of, you know, the front office or whatever it may be in an administrative role. But I think that just where I'm sitting, I'm fine with there being new blood in there. I got frustrated so many times watching this Braves team, watching this dugout a year ago, watching Brian Snicker's reactions or lack thereof. I mean, the whole Jared Kelnick saga with the I didn't see it kind of thing going on, you know, Ronnie coming at him on Twitter. It just like there was just so many little things where I'm like, man. But then you catch fire down the stretch and it's like, oh, yeah, that, there it is. That's what we're looking for. What a great managerial job. But at the same time, like Michael Harris was on fire.
Yeah.
You know, how much credit or lack thereof are we really going to take away from Brian Snicker, man? I'm just in the middle somewhere.
I mean, I'm curious to see who they do get in there, what will be going on. Because I'm, you know, they say risk adverse. I'm change adverse. I really don't like change. So we'll see what happens. But you brought it up. Let's talk about Yankees. They are, I don't mean to laugh, but they are down. The Blue Jays won the first two games of their series 10-1 on Saturday, 13-7 yesterday. They play again tomorrow. You know, I hate it for Max Fried.
Yes.
But like Dylan has been saying, he wants the Phillies in. I don't want to see that. I'm just kidding, Dylan. I don't want to see the Yankees again in the World Series. So I'm okay with the Blue Jays.
I think I am too. And the Blue Jays, what's funny is, like, I think 5, 6, 7 years ago, we all just imagined this kind of thing was opening for the Blue Jays. When you talk about Vlad, talk about some of the other pieces they had in this lineup, the Bo Bichette, who I know is, you know, is out for the year, George Springer kind of in and out of that lineup. It feels like their window is finally here after all that time, that all these guys have kind of matured and have grown into these roles. You've gotten rid of some people. Other guys have grown up. But the story is always going to be about the Yankees. I saw this stat. How about this one? This blew my mind. The Yankees have been around a long time. First time in Yankees franchise history, and I believe this is postseason, but still, striking out 10-plus times in the first four innings.
Oh, wow.
That is insane.
Yeah.
The Yankees have been around a long time. For that to have popped up and been a part of kind of what the story was over the last couple of days is just absolutely crazy. But you mentioned it, man. You go down and look at you know, some of the stats, some of the pitching stats. Max Fried just got absolutely shelled.
Yeah.
It just wasn't good. Warren comes in on the backside of that. He gets tatered up. It was brutal. And on the flip side, the Yankees just couldn't seem to put together enough offense right there at the end to be able to make something happen, man. So just it's just crazy. Just crazy to see all the things that are coming down. Aaron Boone's trying to hold it together. He's like, look, you know, we go out and get a win on Tuesday, we'll be just fine. I don't know if you will. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know if you will. As far as the rest of the postseason, it's also been crazy. Dodgers took game one over the Phillies. Teoscar Hernandez had a 3-run homer that changed the fate of that game. 5-2, game two is tonight. Brewers beat the Cubs 9-3, game two is tonight in Detroit and Seattle. They are tied up after two games. Game three tomorrow. Coming up. Georgia bounced back, Bama had another win, and a major upset knocked a school out of the top 25. Plus, we've got my Mac drop. There were some disappointed Swifties over the weekend, so we're going to play a game called, this ain't it. That's next on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game and the Odyssey app.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Coaches, the players in the locker room, offense, defense, and special teams. The reality is we didn't play well enough in all three phases to win the game. And there's going to be a lot out there to divide. And we got to tune all that out and stick together.
Aye, aye, aye. It's the morning shift.
And here comes the division.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, man.
I fear it might be too late, James Franklin.
It's Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson. Dylan hanging out as well. You just heard it from James Franklin. Not the best weekend for him. Penn State lost to UCLA 42-37, and Penn State fell from number 7 all the way out of the top 25.
That's just brutal, and I don't want to get too far over my skis here. That's the most brutal loss probably in Penn State history. And I know that, you know, look, I have friends that are Penn State grads, and Mike Conte's probably listening right now. I can't think of one worse than that. We talked to multiple people before the year that had Penn State slated as a national title contender. And I know, look, and let me give you guys the backstory. If you don't understand what happened, UCLA let go of Tino Cinceri, who was their offensive coordinator. They put Jerry Neuheisel in that role before the game. Nico Iamaleava, who is not a dual-threat quarterback, all of a sudden comes out running the ball, runs the ball up and down the field on Penn State's defense. I'll give them a little bit of a pass. Okay, Nico, 16 rushes, 128 yards, by far career highs. I'll give Penn State a little bit of a pass where it's like, oh, we didn't expect this to happen with UCLA's offense. The thing I can't give you a pass on is how bad Drew Aller looked at times, how bad this offense looked at times. Drew Aller does end up 19 of 26, 199, but man, when you look at some of the offensive woes for them and the struggles they had at times in this, it was awful. Drew Aller ends up as your leading rusher for Penn State's offense. there's just something amiss. And by the time they got it pointed in the right direction, they couldn't score enough points to catch back up with UCLA, who is a team, to say the least, has been awful. And they somehow beat a team, like I said, that had national title hopes before the year started.
You know who I feel even more sad for than anybody on Penn State? Mike Conte. Mike Conte goes to the game. He was already out there in L.A. because he had to call Atlanta United.
Oh, I didn't know he was out there.
He was out there.
No.
He was out because Atlanta United play LAFC in L.A. He went to the game, and, man, I just – his ex, Twitter, whatever you want to call it,
Mike,
in shambles. I feel so bad for Mike this morning, man.
Mike.
I feel so bad for Mike.
That is – I didn't know he was at the game.
He was at the game. He was at the game, bro.
Dude.
He witnessed it firsthand.
Yikes.
In person. Feel terrible for Mike, our fearless leader this morning. But, no, I mean – Penn State just, I mean, talk about wetting the bed. I mean, you can't wet the bed any worse than that. You really can't. I mean, just you, like you said, Nico's not even a dual threat. And he had,
he was ripping it off.
He was ripping it off.
He's like 160 pounds soaking wet. He's just trucking people.
And I mean, he ends up with what, like over 300 total yards, accounting for five touchdowns. I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, they might have boosted Nico's, you know, draft stock just off that game alone.
Bro, I'm looking at Jerry Neuhauser, who obviously his dad used to be the head coach of UCLA. I'm looking at Jerry Neuhauser getting, like, carried off the field. I'm like, this guy might have gone from analyst to head coach, like, out of UCLA right now. That's how much they love that guy. That's crazy.
They are taking on Northwestern this upcoming weekend. Is that going to be a better opponent?
We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't know what to think of either one of these teams right now. That was so crazy.
Oof. All right. Georgia bounced back with a 35-14 win over Kentucky at home.
There's nothing shocking. I think that was the beautiful part. I think that was the great part for Georgia fans. You go at the end of the third quarter, I believe, you pull up 35-7. You know, Gunnar Stockton was doing Gunnar Stockton things. Dylan Bell was incredible. Cash Jones even gets a touchdown. They played really great defense against a team that in the past has muddied the water, has bloodied some noses. Kentucky usually comes for a bar fight, and yet Georgia Bulldogs are able to kind of put one out there and get one behind them. So I thought this was a huge win for Kirby Smart and Georgia to just be able to move past a loss. This is what we expect out of Georgia. They don't have the highs and lows. You have the loss last week. You come back and get the win. They are still absolutely square in the conversation for national championship contenders.
They did exactly what we talked about, what they were supposed to do on Friday, and they did exactly that. They handled business. Game was never in doubt. If you were a Georgia fan, you never feared that the outcome was going to be any different than what you expected it to be. Handle business from the jump. First two possessions, they go 75 yards on the first one, go pretty much the length of the field on the second one, 96 yards. Put together great jobs. Gunnar Stockton did what he had to do on the ground, through the air. Running game looked like how it was supposed to. So, again, we talked about how we expected Georgia to have one of their more complete performances, one of their better performances, and that's exactly what they put together against Kentucky. So good stuff from the Dogs.
Well, and I love seeing Rusty's tweet. He put out there a reminder that Georgia's 57-6 since 2020.
Yeah, look, Max. There's a bunch of stats like that rolling around. The one where they're up, I think Kentucky was trying to score before the half or something like that, and then they don't. I can't remember if it's a field goal or a touchdown because I was watching from the Bama game, like inside the stadium. But I was looking at it, and right there, they're like talking to Kirby Smart before halftime, and it's like, oh, by the way, when he's up by 14 at halftime, he's 56-0. Yeah, ding. He's up 56-0. He's 56-0 when he's up. I guess 57-0 now when he's up by 14 at halftime. So, yeah, that's exactly what we expected after that.
Absolutely. And number 10, Alabama got a nice 30-14 win over number 16, Vanderbilt. You weren't confident on Friday,
no,
Mike.
No, absolutely not. And look, this game was a lot closer than the final score would suggest. Jim Miller rips off, I don't know, 40 or 50-yarder right there at the end that puts this one out of touch. Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt were about to go up 14-0. He fumbled inside the 10-yard line. You know, Bama comes out. I think they went for it on fourth down. Ty Simpson throws an interception. Vanderbilt goes back down the field, scores a touchdown. Bama misses a field goal. Vanderbilt's driving again. You're like, this is going to get ugly. And then all of a sudden, Justin Jefferson, the middle linebacker for Alabama, forces a fumble, and everything flipped on that one play. Bama's able to put together a couple of good offensive possessions. They get in the end zone. They score right before halftime, have a couple of huge conversions. But this one was still in doubt. Bama finally pulls up by 9, I think, with like 4 or 5 minutes left and kind of put it in a two-score game. And then Jay Miller at the end is able to rip off a long run to cover the spread. But it was a dogfight for a lot of this game. And Vanderbilt, because of the final score, probably not going to get the credit they deserve, nor will Bama for getting the win. But this was a hard-fought game.
Well, and before the game, game day obviously was out there. Nick Saban was on the panel, and they went out, like live went out to Bill Belichick and kind of asked him, they're looking for this warm, fuzzy moment. Like, what have you learned from Nick Saban? This is bleeped, Dylan, is it? Okay, it's bleeped. Let's play this.
I learned an awful lot from Coach Saban. We came from different defensive systems, and we merged them together in Cleveland. I learned a lot from him about man-to-man coverage, which we didn't play a lot of at New York. The 4-3 defense, which, you know, he played at Michigan State and Toledo. You know, it was a great experience, you know, watching Nick handle the free agents and recruit and build the program at Alabama. I'm very grateful for the relationship that I have with him and all the things that I've learned from him. He's the best that's ever done it, and it's a real honor for me to just be with him for those 4 years and to have our relationship and friendship be almost lifelong in this career.
Yeah, well, I never thought in all the time we've been friends that I'd ever say that you're full of shit, but I learned a lot more. I learned a lot more from you than you ever learned from me. Yeah.
That's so good, dude.
That's not true. That's not true.
I love that, man. First of all, the best part of this, you can tell that Bill Belichick is absolutely squirming being mic'd up and being on College Game Day.
Yes.
Like his absolute nightmare. He's like, I don't want to see him this personable. I'm not this personal. I don't want to walk around with a microphone before the game. I want to be, you know, talking to my players, this, that, and the other. And Nick, you can see the lighthearted, retired version of Nick Saban be like, hey, just calm down, dude. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's not that big of a deal.
Nick Saban was like, hey, bro, stop glazing. Yeah, you're glazing too hard right now,
you're,
dog.
You're just giving the politically correct answer and nobody buys it, man. Definitely not me. I love that. That's cool interaction.
Well, each Wednesday night, reminder to join Damian Day-Day Lewis for Prep Sports Nation, a comprehensive look at the teams and athletes making news in high school sports across the state. It's brought to you by Ingles. Low prices, love the savings. That's Prep Sports Nation Wednesday nights on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I was a peripheral Swiftie this weekend. I love Taylor Swift. I do. But I don't go through all the hoops that fans need to understand.
Is it one of those
everything.
Things you can go as deep as you want to, but you don't have to?
Yes, she said on the New Heights podcast, like, you'll never know any of this is here if you're not looking for it.
Wow.
So the album, okay, fine. It's fine. It's not 1989. You know, it's not Red. It's The Life of a Showgirl. It is what it is. But what happened this weekend was Taylor Swift sent her fans on a wild goose hunt. There was a puzzle that was on Google, and you had to unscramble these words. They turned out to be cities where there were actual doors she put up in these cities, and people went out and scanned QR codes that were on these doors, orange doors, all
like
across the world.
This is in real life.
We're talking Barcelona,
wow.
Nashville, yes, everywhere, across the world. There was this big scavenger hunt to figure out.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
Okay, so each QR code goes to a video, and it has different letters. Okay, so you got to unscramble those letters. It turns out to be a line from some letter she put on her website. You Google that line. Think about all the work these people have done.
I was going to say, okay, you lost me at like step five.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. Like the payoff should be amazing here, right?
Right.
The payoff was you get to see the lyric video for The Fate of Ophelia, her latest single, which is crazy because The Fate of Ophelia actual music video was what was playing in the movie theaters this weekend. So then to release a lyric video after you put your fans through this, I don't know, girl.
A little bit much.
Maybe there's more to it.
Okay, you're looking for like a step eight.
I feel she really upset some people with this.
And wasn't she going to drop the lyric video regardless? Like, you could have just waited and not done all the work and still got the same outcome.
Yeah. People were joking, like, oh, she's just trying to keep y'all busy because it's Travis's birthday. So I came up with a game called, this ain't it.
Okay.
And we're just going to go through some disappointing things that have happened through pop culture sports history, okay?
Okay. All right.
You guys can work together on these.
All right, let's do it.
In 1985, what soda tried to launch a brand new flavor only to have their main fan base revolt?
This is New Coke, right?
Yeah, New Coke. Yeah.
This is New Coke.
That definitely was not it. And I wasn't even alive back then, but I know that was not it.
I wasn't alive either. Never had New Coke, but I also know that it won't it.
The Coca-Cola Classic, baby.
It actually turned out to be a huge success for them because the relaunch of Coca-Cola Classic was
massive.
Yeah. And they've stayed on top since.
I wondered if that was going to happen with our friends at Cracker Barrel, but I don't know. I have no follow-up.
I think not quite the same outcome for them.
All right, in 1999, this festival was supposed to spread a message of peace and love It ended up with chaos and fires, thanks in part to Fred Durst.
In what year?
99.
Oh, this is Woodstock 99.
That's Woodstock
99. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know which one of those was more of a disaster, the original or the 99 one. It was crazy.
I know.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane.
Shout out to, who's supposed to be the Fire Fest? Was supposed to be Ja Rule?
Oh, yeah.
We'll get there.
Fire Fest. Okay. She's like, calm down.
All right. Who promised not one, not two, not three titles and then lost his very first finals with the Heat?
LeBron James.
LeBron. LeBron.
That's funny. Hey, shout out to those Mavs. Those Mavs were tough.
Hey, they were. They were good.
I'm very curious if either one of you will know this one. This serial killer / blood spatter experts series finale, was a major letdown in 2013.
Oh, this, well, yeah, I know who this, I can't think of the name of the show, but I know what show it is.
Dexter?
Yeah, Dexter. Because I was going to say, haven't they relaunched it?
They relaunched it.
Okay.
But that thing burned me so bad. First of all, I heard a spoiler, so I refused to even watch it.
Okay.
And I will not watch the new spin.
Yeah. I never got into Dexter. I tried, but it was like after the, you know, after everybody else was kind of into it, so I veered.
It was so good for so long.
Yeah.
This series had 8 years of build up, but the ending in 2019.
Game of Thrones.
Yep.
just automatically
Dude,
knew.
Yeah. That ain't it.
Ted Mosby took 9 years to explain who he ended up with, which wasn't the plot of the show.
I didn't mind this one, though.
But it wasn't the plot.
That's How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
And it was the whole show, you know who he ends up with, but it wasn't the mother. It's just, it was weird.
That is weird.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Ja Rule is still trying to make up for his failed event, along with Billy McFarlane called.
The Fire Fest.
Oh, didn't they try a 2.0 this?
They
didn't
did.
Go well either.
They did. I don't think that went over well
didn't
either.
Didn't work either. It didn't work
Freaking
either.
Freaking Ponzi scheme or something.
All right. And what social media platform thought so much of their success, they launched a phone to give you 24/7 notifications?
Oh. Is this Facebook?
It is.
Wow, they really?
They have their own phone. The problem is, nobody wants to be seen with a Facebook phone.
No.
That neediness, like, oh, I got to check my Facebook.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got a little bit greedy there, man.
Hold up, I got to see if she if she accepted my friend request on my Facebook phone.
Jeez, come on, calm down.
Well, congratulations, guys. You.
I feel like we did good.
Totally rocked
that. Yeah, we crushed that.
I couldn't think of the Dexter thing, but yeah, we crushed it.
Well, coming up, after the Bills lost to the Patriots, it's hard not to start thinking about a week from today. We're going to get into that next. On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game and the Odyssey app.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio.
Apply. It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.